Well, good morning. My name is Jim Owens, and I am the lead pastor at the Manhasset campus. So if you've never seen me before, I'm usually way out west, and I am thrilled to come way out east here into the country. The beautiful fresh air, the green everywhere, and plenty of nearby parking. It is so glorious to be here in Syosset, and it is really fun to be here, and it's also, you know, in Manhasset, we have three services, and here we have only two services, so I'm told I have as much time to preach as I want, like hours and hours, so I'm going to take full advantage of that. We are going to be talking about self-righteousness. So we're on this series called Selfie. So we're doing a bunch of different aspects of it, and today we're talking about self-righteousness. And I'm going to be using as my text Luke 15. But I want to give you a little background about that before we dig into it. So the scene is that it's the Sabbath. And Jesus has been invited to the home of a prominent Pharisee. And of course, there were other Pharisees there. And then it also says that there were other sinners and tax collectors who started to gather around Jesus. So Jesus had in front of him at this point two groups. He had the Pharisees, and he also had the tax collectors and the sinners. They're apparently lumped all into one. Now, we just finished tax season. That doesn't apply today, okay? So if you're a tax collector, this is not you. But the tax collectors and sinners, they were a motley bunch. So a big crowd here in front of Jesus. So this story is often called the story of the prodigal son. And but remember, because he's got two groups in front of him, tax collectors and sinners and the Pharisees, it's also a story really about two sons. So we're going to talk about this not as the lost son or the prodigal son, but the lost two sons. Because Jesus, before this, he tells about the lost coin, and he tells about the one lost sheep. So this is a series of parables that Jesus is teaching about lost things. So we're going to be talking about two lost sons, and I'm going to not focus on the one you probably have heard a number of times, the first lost son, but we're going to give the context of it. So let me just read this. So it says, Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to the fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. So when he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and he went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, the father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven, against you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he's found.' So they began to celebrate." Oh, what a party that must be. must have been. In researching this passage, I came across two books that I would highly recommend to you, and I have stolen from shamelessly. Okay, one is called Return of the Prodigal Son by Henry Nouwen, and the other is called The Prodigal God by Tim Keller. And I also would like to use, I'm going to use this picture as an image of this story, and it's a painting by Rembrandt, and it's the focus of Henry Nouwen's book. And here's the scene. It's a scene of the prodigal son, and oh, I've got my handy-dandy pointer here. So here is the prodigal son, and here is the father, and there is the other character in our story, the elder brother. And so we're going to talk first about the younger son. Now, this is the one you hear about the most, and a lot of focus gets placed on him. So what he does is scandalous at that time, and it would be scandalous today. So basically he says, "Dad, I really don't want to live in your house. I don't want to live under your rules. I don't want to be with you. I don't want to have a relationship with you. I just want your stuff. And honestly, if you were dead, I would be free and I could do whatever I wanted because I know better anyway. So you know what? No offense, but I wish you were dead. Can I have my stuff now?" And the father gives it to him. The father has to sell a bunch of assets, his land, his flock, and he has to liquidate all of these to give the son, which would be basically a third of the family estate in cash money. And the son, as you would predict, he squanders it. As Shakespeare says, a fool and his money are soon parted. And that's what he does. And in fact, the word prodigal means spending money or resources freely and recklessly, wastefully extravagant, having or giving something on a lavish scale. A person who spends money in a recklessly extravagant way. And that's what he does. And when he spends all of his money, everything is gone, and he's feeding pigs. That's his job. Great job for a nice young Jewish boy, right? He swallows his pride, and he says, "You know what? I'm really hungry. I got to go back home." He has hit bottom. And what does the father do? He runs out to the brother. And the son, his well-rehearsed words are, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." I'm thinking he probably said this 5,000 times on his way to see the father. So he knew this. He just said it. But you know what? Father doesn't even listen to him. Doesn't even listen to it, really. You know what he does? If we put that picture back up, he says, "Bring the best robe. Put it on him. Get the ring. Put it on him. Kill the fattened calf. We're going to have a party. A big party. It's a feast. The whole community is going to be there." And you know what? It was excessive, wasn't it? It was extravagant to kill the fattened calf. You know, meat was a big deal. To invite all of your friends, this is a huge deal. Yeah. It was undeserving. It was kind of wasteful in a way, wasn't it? To do this on this son who basically spent all of the money that he was given. And you know what? This is a little side note. You know what I'm thinking? This party was the kind of party that the son really wanted deep down. All those times he did all those other things, didn't touch this thing. Because you know what? He belonged now. He was part of a family again. And he was loved. And you know what the irony of it is? He didn't have to spend a dime. His father did. His father was extravagant. But he didn't have to spend a dime. When we look at this picture, we see the son kneeling before the father. The son is in rags. I don't know if you can see, but he really doesn't have shoes. His shoes are one shoe is totally off. His head is shaved, maybe because he had lice or he had some disease. He just had to shave his head. And look at the father. Look at the father with loving eyes. Bless you. Bless you. You're my son. He takes him back. He belongs. And the son knows he didn't earn it. He didn't deserve it. But the father brings him back because of his grace. Now let's move to the second lost son. This is the elder brother. And let's read this passage from Luke 15. It says, "Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard the music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him, 'What is going on?' 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered the father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" The sermon is about self-righteousness. The elder brother represents self-righteousness. And remember, there's two groups: the sinners and the tax collectors and the Pharisees. The first son is relating to the sinners and the tax collectors. This one is relating directly to the Pharisees. And I would like to propose that it is not necessarily binary. Like, right, we're not just one or the other, but we have elements of both in all of us. And so I would like to go through some maybe characteristics of self-righteousness. And the first one, as we go back to this passage, it says, the older brother became angry and refused to go in. Right? So angry. Self-righteous people have like an anger. Does that make sense? You probably have like, yeah, ooh, he's angry, like all the time. So, and you know, the Pharisees were angry. Like when you read through the Bible, they're angry a lot of times. They're just like angry people. So why do you think, you can talk back to me, why do you think the elder brother was angry?
Jealous.
He's jealous, okay.
He
saw himself as worthy.
He did everything right.
He did everything right. Oh, man. Preach it. You preached my sermon. Amen. Yeah, he's angry. But anger is like the outside emotion, but underneath are all those things that you're getting to. That's great. So the elder brother is jealous. He's super jealous because the younger brother didn't earn it. He didn't earn the party. And you know what? The self-righteous, they keep score. They're keeping score all the time. And they're figuring out who should get what and who shouldn't. And so right now, the way the elder brother looks at this is, I've been doing all this work. It's elder brother 5, younger brother -2. I am so crushing him right now. But he's getting the party. So we can get jealous sometimes of other people, right? Sometimes that happens. Maybe someone gets the guy, or the woman, or the job, or the baby, or the car, or the house, or the whatever. And we think, I should have that. I've been good. I've been doing all the right things. I've been eating right. I've been, you know, sleeping right. I've been doing all the right things. And I got sick, or my wife got sick, or my kid got sick. And they're just fine. And they're just, they're doing whatever the heck they want. Gosh, I wish I had their life. They don't deserve it. The other thing that I think makes them angry or is a symptom of self-righteousness is the father is seen as unjust and unfair. You know, if the brother was in charge, he would say, punish him. Make him earn his way back in, right? That would, I mean, we kind of get that. That makes sense, right? You spent all the money. You don't just get a free ride. That's unfair. It's unjust. And the elder brother sees the father as unjust. You don't even give him a consequence, father. You didn't give me the reward I deserve. Do you ever feel like that? Maybe you're a student, and you know some people are—they're cheating on the tests, you know. They're getting really good grades, and maybe they get into a school, or they get the good grade, or they get the final, or they get the award, or whatever. And it's like, it's not fair. They cheated, and I'm just angry about that. It's not fair. The system is not fair. God is not fair. God is not really just. Or maybe, you know, the young woman or the young guy who gets attention from all the men or the women or whatever. And, you know, they're of maybe questionable character, okay? They're constantly flirting. They're always out there. But you know what? They got dates all the time. What is it with this? Why do the girls like all the jerks? I don't get it. I'm a great guy. How come I can't get a date? You know, it's not fair. Here's another thing. If we're self-righteous, we tend to like to make up our own rules. So, you ever play a game of cards with a little kid and they're losing, okay? And they're like, and kids do not like to lose at these card games. And so they're saying, okay, we're gonna play by Ukrainian rules right now, and fours are wild. I win. And then the next hand comes around and they're losing. And oh, we're going to Lithuanian rules now. Sixes are wild. Oh, I win. Right? That's the way it works. If you change the rules, then you can control the game. You can make things work by my standards. And so this is what the Pharisees did. They made up, they got these rules. They set this up and they said, these are things that I can do, these are rules that I can keep. Then Jesus comes along and he says, you know what? If you're just talking bad about people, you're really, in your heart, you're like really angry and speaking nasty about them, you're murdering them. Well, the rules just changed. I can't keep that rule. You know how people say, well, I'm going to go to heaven. I'm not a murderer and I don't steal much anyway. So yeah, I'm going to go to heaven. So they're changing the rules. A self-righteous person has to change the rules because otherwise they feel bad about themselves. And then, of course, no one can follow their own rules. So you know what they do? They just change them. That's easy, right? Here's another symptom of self-righteousness. Exhausted, tired, overworked, and you can't play. If you're exhausted, you have that, oh, I can't, you know, I can't. I got to work. I'm going to do children's ministry for four services straight for the next 10 years of my life. I can't. I can't do that. I'm sorry. I can't come to the party. I got to work. You know why? Because when we're self-righteous, we feel like we have to earn it. This is what the younger brother, the older brother couldn't go to the party. He was so used to working all the time because you know why? His salvation depended on it. If he wasn't working, if he wasn't going overboard, he wasn't going to earn the goods that he wanted. The other thing that happens in self-righteousness is we look down on others. We can judge other people. We compare. So the older brother, if you look in the picture here, you see him, he's at the highest, of the three, he's at the highest point, right? Rembrandt, he's a smart guy. He puts him at the highest point. He's looking down on not just the brother, he's looking down on the father too. And he's judging them. He's comparing himself. Again, he's keeping score. So he's thinking, you know, while you were out having your fun, younger brother, spending all the money from the family business, were you having your fun? You know what I was doing? I was working. I was working hard. Side note, you know what I think the younger son was thinking? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was getting left behind. I was being taken advantage of. I was being robbed. I would get so drunk I couldn't really function for days. And I became addicted to alcohol, actually. And I couldn't function without being drunk half the time. And I got addicted to sex. And, you know, I stopped feeling things. And I just had these urges. I had all this stuff going on. Oh, yeah, that was a blast. That's a little side note for what the younger brother feels when the elder brother starts judging. But again, judging is a great way for us to have righteousness. The judging, what that does is it puts other people down and then we feel up because God grades on a curve. So if more people are down and I'm up, then I win. And that's what this is all about if I'm self-righteous. It's about winning. So comparing and judging to put others down, that is a way for me to feel self-righteous. The other thing is he sees the father as a slave driver. The elder brother says, "All these years I have been slaving for you, never disobeyed your orders." He doesn't see himself as a son. He sees himself as a slave. Do we ever feel like that? Like God's a slave driver. Like he just wants more from me. I can't rest. We can't stop giving. And then we blame and we don't take responsibility. You know, blaming others. You know, if you hadn't let the son go, do all this stuff, we wouldn't be in this situation. If the son hadn't done, it's blaming. My current situation is bad because I need to blame someone else. If blaming is a part of our lives, self-righteousness is in there somewhere. And then another one is, I hate myself or God in difficult or bad times. So here's the way this works. See, if I do the right thing and difficulty comes in my life, then something's wrong with God. He's not paying me back for what I did. So I'm mad at God. Or I screwed up. Something bad happened to me. I beat myself up. I hate myself. I'm mad at myself. This is a no-win situation. There's no way to win in this. And then the last thing is there's transactional relationships. You know, you do for me, I do for you. This is the way it is with other people. This is the way it is with God sometimes. With other people, like, you know, last month I called you 3 times to initiate getting together, and you called me once. What's going on? I'm keeping score. Everything's got to be tit for tat. Everything's got to be even, Steven. You do something for me, I got to do something for you. It's a transactional thing. It's not a love relationship. So when the elder brother comes to the father, here's what happens. He's lost. This is a great quote. When the elder brother says, because I have never disobeyed you. The elder brother is not losing the father's love in spite of his goodness. He's losing the father's love because of his goodness. It's not his sins that create the barrier between him and his father. It's the pride he has in his moral record. It's not his wrongdoing, but his righteousness that is keeping him from sharing in the feast of the Father. So, why does self-righteousness lead us away from God? This is a great quote. It says, "There was a deep, black, wordless conviction in him that the way to avoid Jesus was to avoid sin." Does that sound strange? First time I read that, it was strange. But here's the logic of it. See, if I think I'm righteous on my own, then I don't need Jesus to die on the cross. All right, that's good for Jesus, right? But you know what it also means? That I don't have to worship Jesus. I don't have to follow Jesus. I don't have to honor Jesus. I don't have to have a relationship with him. Just like the Father. I don't have to have a relationship with the Father anymore. I can just do the right thing. This is the problem. This is why the Son is lost. I'm going to ask the worship team to be coming up soon. And we're going to have a small time of response. And this is about coming home. There are elements of us that maybe are for the younger brother, but there's also elements of the elder brother, where we are relying on our good deeds. We're relying on our work. We're relying on what we have done to make us right before God. And that's an endless pit. So I'm gonna ask for a time of response. You can be in your seat, or you can just come forward for prayer. And if you look at this here, here's the younger son. He's humbled, he's hit bottom. He knows he has nothing left to give. He knows that he needs the Father's love to be brought in as a son. But you know what? The elder brother does too. And the father actually goes out to look for the elder son. And the elder son is standing outside of the feast. He's standing outside of the home. He doesn't want to go in, not because he's done the wrong thing, but because he's doing all the right things. If any of these things about being self-righteous has touched you, I'm just asking, just let them go. Because there's nothing we can do to earn God's favor. It's about a relationship with him. It's about coming to the Father in humility and asking him to take all those, even the wrong things that we've thought about how we are righteous before him. And, you know, this feast was extravagant. This feast was lavish that he gave the younger son. And he's telling the older brother, he says, you know, everything I have is yours. He wants to do the same thing for the brother, the older brother. But we don't know the end of the story with the elder brother. He's still outside. What's he going to do? What are you going to do? Are you going to stay outside? Are you going to wait and just see what happens, see how God acts and see if he wants to come in? Or are you just going to come in and just, the Father wants to love you. He wants you to come in as his son and his daughter. He wants you to join the feast. He wants to put his hands on you. He wants to put a ring on your finger to make you his son and daughter. He wants to put a robe over you. He wants to invite you in to this extravagant feast. That's what this song is about. It's a reckless love. It's a reckless, crazy love that God wants to lavish on you. So I want to just ask this. If you want to come forward, well, we have a couple of folks here that are going to be praying for you. Just come and just ask God, just, I'm going to give it up, my righteousness or my lostness. I've hit the bottom, or I feel like I'm at the top of my game. Both things are going to keep you away from the home. So let's take this time as we